Well, let me just actually apologize. We're a few minutes late, but Rabbi Yoel Unger is just so much fun. I'm sorry. I'm just a terrible Yetzer Hara. And when the two of us get going, it's both Shiurim that end up delayed. We're equal opportunity delayers.
What was he teaching?
He's teaching Kuzari, if you'd like to, if you'd rather be watching that.
Well, let's see.
You know.
I tried it, and they asked me to
anti-Semitan.
What is wrong with
them? He said it was a men's club.
Well,
they did.
Well, they can't come here.
Oh, I invited Shlomo.
So, we left off last time discussing Tefillas Kelim, so maybe we'll start this time with Tefillas Kelim and we'll take it from there. In terms of mugs, right, I've received many questions this week about Tefillas Kelim, not unrelated to the Shir last week. Mugs, so as we said last time, we'll just review quickly, that the Torah says that there are six metals, and those six metals have to be toveled. Where is that found in the Torah?
This week's Parsha.
This week's Parsha. Excellent. In this week's Parsha, it says that. So I was thinking about making it a Thursday night topic, even. So in this week's Parsha, it says that you have to tovel the six metals. There was a discussion. Is it only those six metals, or is it all metals, right? Gold, silver, copper, iron, lead, and tin. Or what about aluminum? Aluminum, everybody knows, is a different element, right? That, in fact, is not the same as the other things. You have to tovel aluminum. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much because we said that the midrabanan, rabbinically, they said you also have to tovel glass because glass is similar to metal. How is glass similar to the metal? If it breaks, you can melt it down and put it back together, right? So therefore, if glass is similar to metal, metal is definitely similar to metal as well. One could make a strong argument. So therefore, if I'm using a metal which is not one of the six metals that were enumerated, for example, aluminum, or for example, titanium, or one of the other metals that we will sometimes use, I think some people actually at this point are using magnesium even for certain things, right? If you use any of those metals, right, then it's no worse than glass. So because it is similar to the other metals, then at least rabbinically you have to tovel it. So any metal and any glass has to be toveled before you use it if you acquire it from a non-Jew.
Are you going to name the six metals?
I did already once. Would you like to name them again?
Yeah, I mean, I heard aluminum, gold.
No, any metal.
I heard
right,
that.
Right. Again, according to the Torah, in this week's parsha, you will find six metals. And they are gold, silver, copper, iron, lead, and tin. Those are the six, right? Aluminum is not on the list. Are those the six basic elements? Something like that?
I have no
idea. Okay. So, zayn
right? It's taken a lot to figure out how to
purify
aluminum, so it's not surprising that they weren't using titanium.
And titanium also probably wasn't the...
That's a new metal.
What? Tungsten, right? Probably wasn't a big seller in those days. I mean, they existed, but... So, now let's get to other things. So, obviously, anything that if you break it, you can't melt it and put it back together, does not have to be toveled. Notably, pottery. Pottery of all sorts does not have to be toveled. Now, what if I had pottery, but that pottery was given a glaze, correct, a thin coat of glass. What does that do? So that is a discussion. The way I have been taught is that does not have to be toveled. So therefore, your china, your mugs, right? Anything of that sort does not have to be toveled. I tell people, if you come to the Rapp household and you look at the bottom of our plates, you know what you find? Stickers. Because we never took them off. Because you don't have to, because we don't tovel them. So in terms of anything is that, any sort of form of pottery, any terms of form of porcelain, etc., even if it does have a thin layer of glass, that's not considered glass, and therefore, since overall you can't, all the king's horses and all the king's men could not melt it and put it back together again, it does not have to be toveled. Yes?
Fine china, which has a glaze on it, it doesn't have it on that ring on the bottom.
Okay.
That's still just...
That makes it less
raw,
of a problem.
Raw.
That makes it less of a problem. Right? Because that went to it. Should I run through the other questions that people asked me this week?
Yes.
Okay. So other questions people want to know. There was a lot of concern about George Foreman grills and the like. So in terms of electronics, the assumption is that my experience has been over the years that if you total something that is electronic and you let it dry out, and then you can use it without a problem. We have totaled all of our electronics over the years, and we've never run into a problem. If you have one of the newer George Foreman grills, two things. One is some of them specifically say that the plates are ceramic. If they are ceramic, no problem. Okay? Ceramics do not have to be totaled. If they say, if they are removable, the trays, right? If that's the case, once again, they do. You can just remove the trays. It's only that which touches the food. Somebody this week sent me a schematic design of their outdoor grill, asking what has to be tovled. So only the grate itself. That's it. Everything else, metal or not metal, it's not a problem. If you have a toaster oven, not a toaster like the Pop-Tarts, but a toaster oven like we have, you put it in there, close the door down. If you can remove the grates, you can just tovel that, and that's all what you have to do. Right, so that's always only that which comes in contact with food. Is that a hand?
No? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like if you said it's too big.
Oh, so if you have something that's too big, right? If you have a commercial size pot that's bigger than the mikveh, for example. So in that case, we said that there are two potential ideas which you can do. One is you could put a hole on the bottom of the pot and then fix it, and now it was no longer made by a non-Jew, it was made by a Jew. And we discussed that that's similar to the idea of the soda can. The second possibility, which may be more practical, is that you can sell a partnership in the pot to a non-Jew. Only a Jew has to tovel kalev. If I go to a non-Jew's house and everything's kosher, I don't have to worry about whether the person has toveled the kalev or not. Alex Jacobs told a story this week related to this, that he was at a dinner someplace and they had gotten him wrapped meals from the deli, but they didn't have any plasticware. This is really a classy joint. They don't carry plasticware. But they said, in fact, we have new silverware which we can bring out to you in the box. It's still wrapped in the plastic. So he said, that's fine. So Shlomo Free jumped up and said, but they didn't tovel it. So the answer is they don't have to tovel it. That's not a problem.
Because?
Because they're not Jewish.
Ah.
Right?
I didn't realize.
Aha. Uh-huh.
What was the question?
Right.
On a metal.
Right. Right. The question is, I think what we're getting to is if you're at someone else's house who is a member of the tribe, who doesn't tovel their dishes, can you eat off of those dishes? So, rule number one, it doesn't make it not kosher. Right? That is, so the food, even though it came in contact with this, is still kosher. However, you, to a certain extent, by your using it, they are being over a mitzvah's ase. They are skipping a mitzvah they're supposed to do. What they generally say is you can use it in a situation where it wouldn't be necessary, meaning a plate. You don't really need plates. I shouldn't say so to my wife. But, you know, you could probably eat a meal fine without your plate. It would make a little bit of a mess, probably.
Soup's hard.
Ah. Soup bowls, on the other hand, have more utility to them. What? It's metal, I thought.
Or China.
Right. Right. So too. Right. Right. So a glass is. Now, the question is, are you sure they didn't, or you have reason to believe? In the case we're talking about glass, and you're not sure, that's what's called a suffix. And we said glasses, derabbanan. It's only rabbinic. The general rule is if I have a doubt. If I have a doubt about something which is biblical in nature, then I have to be machmir. I have to be stringent in that case. If I have a doubt about something that is rabbinic in nature, we say safek d'rabbanan l'kula, that in that case I can be lenient.
Well, what do they mean to be sure? Like you see a sticker and they say, oh, by the way, I don't tovel my kalev.
So again, if you see a sticker on it, it could be they missed the sticker.
But it still
doesn't properly. No, so when it comes to toveling, people and kalim alike, the rule generally is that we try to have everything removed, but if it's what's called a miyut umat, a miyut eino makbin, meaning that there's, when it comes to what they call a chatzitza, something that's between the water of the mikvah and that which is being toveled, if there's something gets in the way, that's called a chatzitza. Now, there one thing is, well, do I care about it? Oftentimes, I forget, but I don't care whether it's there or not. That's called eino makbid. I'm not concerned whether it's there or not. But the second thing is, well, is it covering the majority of the item being toveled or the minority of the item? Right? In the event that it covers the minority and you don't really care about it.
What do you mean you don't care? Right, what do you mean you don't care? I thought you're supposed to.
I don't mind that it's there.
But you're supposed to care.
What?
Why aren't you? I mean, if you're going to.
In general, I buy dishes, and I buy them in Israel, so they don't have to be toveled. Okay? I buy Israeli dishes.
Yes. But my point is, if you buy it here.
No, listen. So I'm saying that I buy it in Israel, right?
Yes.
And I don't have to tovel it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Do I take the stickers off or do I leave them on?
It sounds like you leave your stickers on.
Well, what would you do?
I would always take my stickers off.
Why would you take off your stickers? What type of person are you?
It's just something I do so that people know that my dish is clean in the front and in the back.
I would like to keep it on so they think that I just bought it new.
Well, over time, it's not going to look new. It just looks dirty and ooky.
What? What? Right, okay. Right, so the idea being, in the event, if it wasn't for Tevilas Kalim, right, if it wasn't for this, I would have left my sticker on, right? It doesn't bother me that the sticker is there.
So you wouldn't tell somebody to go back with you again if it doesn't bother them?
Right, so if, again, I probably, what's the downside? I would probably recommend that you do it anyhow, right? But, you know, but if a person got stuck and they said, oh my goodness, you know, I went to Tovah my Kalim and I did the classes and I see there's one where I missed the thing and now I'm having Mechutanim over for the first time. What am I going to do? So in that case, I tell them, right? Being that it's not really a chatzitza, you're okay.
Okay, but so let's say, I mean, this is extreme, but you're sitting at someone's house, mm-hmm. conversation comes up with it, they don't. So mm-hmm. the pot that they used to make the rice, which they are now serving you, was never toiled. What do you do?
So you could eat
the food
it.
Is kosher.
The food is kosher. I'm not sure. If they don't toil their candle, I might begin to wonder, well, what else don't you do exactly? Which other parts of the religion are you not as that into? But assuming that, whatever, the people, they're uneducated. They're uneducated. They learned all the kosher things, but they never read that chapter. Right? But besides that, they got everything else down perfectly. They would never make milchik bread on Shavuos. They're not that type of people. They do everything kosher, right? So in that case, so what I'm saying is the fact that it's made in the pot, it's still kosher. You're not going to eat out of the pot, I hope, right? So that won't be a problem. You'll put it on your plate, which doesn't have to be toveled, and theoretically you could eat with your hands, right? So therefore you can use the fork as well. Again, this is not something we would rely on l'chachila, right? Right? I wouldn't say, well, we don't have to tovel our forks because, you know, we used to eat with our hands. That wouldn't work for us, right? But if you find yourself in an uncomfortable position, there's room to rely on that.
It's very hard to say that I
can
eat my
children. Okay, fine. Right, so again, yeah, this, something like soup. Something like soup is would be more difficult. I would tell you to take a pass on the soup.
You could drink your soup from the bowl.
What?
You could drink your soup.
Get
the wooden chops that you're using. Don't worry about it.
Well, it depends. If it's Campbell's chunky, it's the soup that eats like a meal. So then you'll be okay.
We could ask for chopsticks.
Right. So in terms of that. Now, interesting. We'll just note as a side point. When we sell chametz, right? So we sell all of our chametz, etc. We do not sell our silverware. We put it away, but we don't sell it when we sell the chametz. Why? Because we'd have to tovel it afterwards if we did sell it, right? It would have a non-Jewish ownership for that time, and then you'd have to re-tovel your dishes. And we definitely, it's not easy to tovel dishes around here, so we would not want to get involved in that.
Someone who's not Jewish comes to your house,
mm-hmm.
use your pot, they switch on, whatever, it becomes not kosher,
the pot
itself, right?
No.
I mean, I'm getting a little bit off topic.
Well, let's, why don't we all head off topic together? Are we done with
Tila's Gaelum? I'm fine with it.
Yeah? Anybody else saying?
If I use foil paper.
Yes.
And I'm not cooking in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say I'm making a very large salad.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of taking a heavy bowl, I'd like to make it in a lightweight aluminum pan, mix it all together, and then put it in the bowl and dress it. I cannot use that foil pan again?
Unless you tovel it, most people say you can't.
Okay.
Yes?
When I asked you privately,
mm-hmm.
and I said it was not used for cooking, you said I can use it.
My understanding, right? Was it used not cooking but for food?
Mixing something or storing something?
Right, again, that's the question. Not cooking for food or not cooking not for food?
She was just talking about a salad.
That's food.
But she's not cooking.
But she's only mixing it.
Doesn't matter. Again, this is something you're repeatedly. That's the reason that we said. So, why? An aluminum pan is made out of aluminum. We agree on that?
We do.
Okay.
It's melted.
You could?
Sure you could.
Wait, what?
Why not?
What? I said aluminum pan or aluminum foil paper. You can't melt that and put that back in.
Theoretically, you can.
You can. I can melt it down and pour it back into...
You usually throw it away, but...
I bring my chemist with me for these questions. Try not to leave home without her.
That's good. But
right.
She's just mixing, and it's
right.
Cold after.
So, one second. So, again, it's aluminum is a metal that can be melted down and reconstituted.
Right.
Okay? So, based on that, you should have to tovel it. Why not? The only reason not to is because Moshe Feinstein came up with this original idea, which said that something that in order for something to be a kli, in order for something to be considered a utensil, it has to be things that's used repeatedly. If it is only used once and then thrown out, that's not considered a kli. Now that's a big statement, and it has wide-reaching ramifications where you wouldn't even guess it. So, a plastic cup, would you say a kli or not a kli?
No.
You
only don't
want a kli.
If you use a plastic,
so a kli.
Again, I'm asking a plastic cup. I'm not asking about Tulas Kalem. In general, would you say a plastic cup is a kli or it's not a kli?
General, yes.
Why is it a kli?
It's
and then what do you do after you use it one time?
Chuck it.
Right? Well, even... So putting your mother and Antonia aside. Okay. Okay. We can edit this before it goes online. Don't worry. You know Shlomo. I think he can help you out. Aluminum pan. Kli or not a kli? What?
The same way a cup, yes.
Right. So the problem is, why wouldn't you have to tovel an aluminum pan? What reason would I say that no, aluminum pans, I don't have to tovel them?
Because they're disposable, and I'm not going to use it except...
So it's disposable. What halachic import does it have? And if it was red, like, would that make a difference?
No.
So why does disposable make a difference?
So, okay...
It's rectangle. these
are,
so why does disposable make a difference? If it does.
Because it's temporary.
Right.
It's temporary. And if it's temporary, therefore, it's not a kli.
Right.
You only have to do tefilas kalim on
saying,
a kli.
So it's not a kli. We're
right.
saying
that's what we're
the
saying.
Cup and the aluminum, they're not.
Right. So again, if you tell me that the aluminum pan is not a kli, then my plastic cup is not a kli either.
See.
Right? If my plastic cup is not a kli, forget about Tilas Kalim, I can't make kiddush using it, and I can't do any Tilas Yadayim with it.
What?
The cup has to be a kli.
Right.
You have to use. So if you tell me that this is not a kli, I can't use it. I can't use a plastic cup in a Tilas Yadayim.
I'm getting confused here, but aren't those Tilas Yadayim cups we have all over our house?
They're not this plastic.
They're plastic. They're not
Right. How long have they been in our house? How many times have we used them?
A million times.
You children who take your plastic cups and you crack them during dinner and put them in your mouth. How long do they last?
Maybe
longer or shorter than our Netilas Yodayim cup. No. We didn't say that. No. Right. So that's the idea. Rav Moshe Feinstein came up. Now, not everybody agrees with this idea. Rabbi Herschel Schechter disagrees. Rabbi Herschel Schechter thinks you have to tovel your aluminum pans. That's what he holds, because this idea, it's usually one time, chad pa'ami, that makes it temporary, that makes it not a kli. He doesn't buy the whole thing.
So he says it's a kli and you have to toil.
It's a kli, that's it, you're done, and you can't drink from your Snapple bottle.
That true of the cups, the plastic cups, or not?
No, they're according not to this, the exactly. Flip side is you can use your plastic cup for Kiddush.
And you
can
drink.
You lost what? Me on that.
Well, again, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, we have to determine if something is a kli, a utensil, or not.
Right.
If it's temporary, he says it's not. If it's permanent, it is. Right. So if it's not a kli, well, that's got its pluses and minuses.
Right.
Right. The plus is you don't have to tovel it.
Right.
The minus is you can't use it for certain things. Right. That require a kli. What? Yeah. Right. Correct. Right. If for example, sometimes I know people like to use two pans at the same time. If you have a turkey or something heavy in it, yes? Right? The bottom one you could reuse because that one, the top one, was strong enough.
Even if you would just hold up the top one, the turkey would fall right through.
But it doesn't.
if the I don't know if you really need to hear the Sharon, but you're a good enough person without it. What?
I missed you were talking about the plastic cup, which is not a kli, and then you said, but you can make kiddush in the plastic cup.
Right,
the connection.
Right, again, so now the reason according to Rabbi Herschel Schechter, Rabbi Herschel Schechter says, a kli is a kli is a kli, okay. Whether it is temporary or not. Or
plastic or aluminum.
Whatever it is. And therefore, he says,
you can make
Kiddush, but you have to tovel your aluminum pans. I'll tell you, actually, that there are now brands that make that you don't have to tovel aluminum pans. Now what they do is they have a Jew take ownership of the aluminum before the factory in China makes the pan. So therefore, this is Jewish owned and you don't have to tovel it, and they come with hashkachas on it.
I was going to say, how would you know?
What?
Cool.
No, the OU doesn't hold to this. The OU does not follow this. I actually had a din Torah about this, a very fascinating case about somebody who paid a rabbi to bless his aluminum pans, and he in fact made them, and they had a stamp on them. It was embossed, this Chassidus Rebbe was embossed in the pan, embossed. Indicating that also. Okay. That
Is that the phrase? Okay, sorry.
You're not the emboss of me. So they were and with that he was selling them. Now what happened was it seemed that he had paid the mashkiach to give a hashkacha to certify the 9x13 pans, but not other sizes. And in fact, when he came out with other sizes, so the rabbi was very upset about this, and he sent out a message that these pans are no longer under my hashkacha. Right? So therefore, all the stores removed them from the shelves. So the seller went back and said, no, whatever the issue is, they're no worse than the aluminum pans you sell without a hashgacha. You know, I'll take a cut, just pay me what you pay them. And they said, no, we don't want to get a bad name for ourselves. So nobody would buy this guy's aluminum pans. So what the guy decided to do instead is he'll just sell them regularly. So he went to Chinatown to sell these aluminum pans to these wholesalers. But the people in Chinatown took a look at it. They said, no, because they are embossed with the name of the whenever the Chinese people would make a sponge cake, it would say under the hashgacha on the bottom of it. And, you know, they got a little freaked out. So they didn't want to buy it either. Right? So eventually, this, right? So that's why this guy's in Bezdin, because he's got these aluminum pans that nobody wants because they're embossed with a bad hashgacha. Right, you're using you're repeat. It's not anything to do with cooking.
I understood.
Right, again, if you're just going to store something in there, I said.
Store the cookies in there.
Right, I think that's not a problem.
Wait a minute, why storing the cookies is not a problem?
Right, cookies would probably be a problem also.
Oh, okay. Right. Let's be clear.
Right.
So if you're storing the food in there, it's not a problem.
No, it is a problem. Both cases, if you're using it for food.
Okay, so in other words,
Yes. Okay. Aisha's calling.
My regular mixing aluminum bowls.
Yes.
That I take and I've toiled.
Great.
Those I can use as much as I want.
Please do.
But not
the tin.
Not
so
the tin.
If I can find.
Unless you want to toil
them. You want to toil them. I think
everything. Okay.
Yeah.
So now I have to find some aluminum bowls. Yeah.
Most of the aluminum pans now have an OU on them. So what
does that mean? All that means is they don't cover it in lard. They do not guarantee that that's sweet toilet. In fact, I'll go a step further. The OU, as a policy, will not give a hashgacha saying that you don't have to tovel the aluminum pan. Even if you offer the money to say do this, that's why you get these lesser known hashgachas, shall we say. Now, it happens to be a good point, because let's think about it. Let's go back to my friend with the aluminum pans that he couldn't unload. Let's say the people in Chinatown would have purchased it, right? And then I'm walking through Chinatown, and lucky day, for the same price of an aluminum pan, I get an aluminum pan with the hashgacha from the Vuzhu Vuzhu Rav that says that I don't have to tovel it. But guess what? I do have to tovel because I just bought it from a non-Jew. So unless you can guarantee the entire supply chain is Jewish, you're going to have a problem. That's why the OU wouldn't even give a hashgacha. Besides the fact that they think that you don't need a hashgacha on it, but they wouldn't even give a hashgacha on it because in order to be a successful hashgacha, you would have to follow the entire supply chain, which in fact, as we've seen here, just can't happen. So that was the issue. We recently bought some aluminum pans that came with this from Aaron's because they have to pay something. They were half price. They were cheaper than the other ones. So, and it's good. You bake a cake. It comes with hashgacha on the bottom. That's all. It makes it kosher. It's good. So that's the story. Again, so according to Rav Schechter, this is all irrelevant because even before you use it the first time, you have to tovel it. And other according to Rav Moshe, no, as long as it's temporary. Is using it two times not temporary? You can make that argument. That's the truth. But, you know, where do you draw the line between temporary and permanent? That's a hard question. One is definitely temporary. A lot is definitely not. Between one and a lot? Yes. Oh.
Can you make it, like, on the side? Or does it have to be on the...
Make a hole in the piece of tea?
Yeah.
What? On the bottom?
Has to be in the bottom,
or is it still a cleat?
You can put dressing in it.
You can make a hole and then mix the salad and never fix the hole? You can fix it.
You didn't fix it.
Right. No, you have to fix
it. Like
duct tape is great, especially the colorful stuff. I really like that. Use the colorful ones, like, you know, the real, the fun.
Like the painter's tape.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, now I have a grill question.
Good.
Let's say I'm going to put hamburgers and hot dogs and a bunch of stuff on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if I make them all, I mix them all, not in my aluminum foil pan, because then I wouldn't grill. All right, I get it all ready.
You want to throw it away right now.
You want to flip over? Yeah, I can't even...
Come on, Michelle. Come on.
I eat at her house.
Oh, I used to eat at her house.
So anyway, I put the food, I take the pan out to the grill.
Okay.
Is
okay.
It an aluminum pan? The pan with a foil or parchment paper or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it out and I take it off, out of the pan and I put it on the grill. When it comes off the grill, if I have a lot of people and it's a lot of food and nobody's going to eat it, can I put it back in the pan? I carry
yes.
it out until it's eaten.
Yes.
But then I have to trash that pan.
Eventually, yeah.
Good, the garbage can is on the pan.
Wait, soon. But I can just take a plastic cup and throughout the meal fill it with drinks and drink it. Again and again and again with the plastic cup.
What? Most plastic cups are plastic. That's
yeah,
a good point.
You can still melt it and put it back together.
No, you can't. We'll try when we go home.
Get your mold out.
Well, we know from experience, plastic can melt.
Wow. Yeah, but the most plastics just evaporate when they get melted. Right, so you can't put that back together. Okay. Moving right along. Glad we all feel better about that now. The next issue I wanted to talk about was an issue that was being referred to here is what if you have non-Jewish help and issues involved in that. So, the first focus I'd like to do it is what's called Bishul Akum. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us as follows, that in the event that something is cooked by a non-Jew, even if I am guaranteed that the ingredients were kosher and there was no milk and meat involved, right? Someone, I have a mashgiach watching the whole time, still you cannot eat that food. Why not? That's a discussion among the Rishonim. It's probably because gezer mishum chasnas, that in the event that that Pete will go and make me kosher food, and I'll eat it all the time, and oh, this is amazing. What I wouldn't give for this food, I'll try to marry into the family. I can have Shabbos meals with Pete. It would be amazing. Right? So because of that, that's why there's something called Bishul Akum. It has nothing to do with whether it's kosher or not. You cannot eat that food. Now, as Fran has been making hand motions indicating... So anything that's made by a combination of a Jew and a non-Jew together is not a problem, only if it's made solely by a non-Jew.
Why does this help? You know, I know what you turned on the flame, but I don't see...
Well, I didn't say anything about the flame. I didn't say anything about the flame.
They do
right?
One little thing. I don't...
Wait. Easy, though. So what happens is, you need... Right, in the event that there are maybe too many cooks, right? But they what? There you go. Right, so if there are multiple cooks together, right, that one throws in the... It's like stone soup. One person puts in the carrots, and another person puts in the potatoes, etc. Right, since this was made by multiple people, and some of them are Jewish, we're not concerned about this. How little does the Jew have to do? That is a discussion and a major dispute between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Ashkenazim are very lenient in this case. Right? The Gemara talks about, the Ramah has this, Shaleach Kisim. If a Jew walks by and throws a piece of wood into the oven, throws in a toothpick, that's enough. That's enough involvement in order to be considered partially made by a Jew. The equivalent nowadays, perhaps, would be if in the old... Even less than in, I don't know if anyone has a pilot light oven anymore. We recently lost ours, unfortunately, over the last year. Last summer we still had one, but that's gone now. If a Jew lights the pilot light and then the non-Jew turns on the oven, right? So since the original flame comes from the Jew, we assume that that's good enough. That's the equivalent thereof, that is enough Jewish involvement. So I light the pilot light now, and 6 months later, the help turns on the oven. I was involved in this, and therefore it's considered good enough. Right? In terms of commercial ovens, right? Commercial ovens still have pilot lights, and therefore whenever the pilot light goes out, the mashgiach has to come in and light the pilot light. I've actually been walking down the street once and I was called into a restaurant and asked to please light a pilot light. Because
the
it just needs...
couldn't do it?
Mashgiach was out at the time.
Around.
So that's why they had asked.
How did you know you were Jewish? So you look Jewish at all.
What else would he be?
It happened to be that they knew me in this restaurant in question. But I think that it was. It's not a bad guess that I'm Jewish. What?
You don't have to actually confirm that you're Jewish?
Well, what do you mean by confirmation?
That
is correct, Susie. So according to Ashkenazim, that is enough, right? In these major factories, Nabisco, whatever it is, right? The Mashgiach goes out there, lights. They're not there all the time, but they will light to make sure that it's good. Sfardim do not rely on this. Sfardim assumed that just throwing a wood chip into the oven is not enough. And if that's not enough, turning on the pilot light is not enough. Right? Svardim require actual involvement. So therefore, I remember this, if you're dating a Svardi girl, you just can't take her to any restaurant with a good Ashgacha because it's a problem. So in fact, what Svardim do is when they come to a restaurant, they will ask the Mashgiach to please go stir their pot. Right? They asked you a question.
I eat this great food, and I think it's really because of the wonderful pilot light. This is so good. You know, I don't want to go marry into pizza, and then I want to marry into whatever Mashiach, because he's just so wonderful.
Again, once this was made by multiple people, at that point, you know, I'm not marrying anybody. You know, I'm not that excited about the person who did the pilot light, about the person who did anything else.
The pilot light,
right? Good. So you can marry a Svardi. You're not going to have to worry about this anymore, right? You'll be able to eat in no place. You'll be, right? Enjoy your rice on Pesach. That's what you're getting all year. That's it. Right? I assume if you'd go to the deli, right? I assume the people that are cooking in the deli, by and large, are not Jewish.
That's correct.
Right? And therefore, if someone is a Sephardi, they will ask the Mashgiach or the owner or somebody to please go be involved, stir the pot, right, in order that it would not be bishul.
Or like cut the bread for a sandwich, is that
enough? No, it has to be,
it's cooking.
It's got to be
okay.
The cooking, right? So that is, so in terms of this, that's only for Ashkenazim. Sephardim do not rely on that. Yes?
But irrespective, if you're using an oven, has to initiate, no matter.
No, not at all.
If, so a non-Jew.
So again, if the help in my house turns on the oven, I can cook in it. Why not?
Well, but you lit the pilot, is what you were saying.
No, even if I did, we don't have a pilot. No one here has a pilot anymore. We found that, right?
Well, they're automatic pilots. I have an automatic pilot.
What does that mean? Click, that one?
Yes, you're saying that's electric too. So yes.
Right. So that's not a pilot. That's not a pilot.
So Amish can also, my help comes in, they switch on the oven, they make the food, the chicken.
You've got a problem.
Why? Yeah, tell me why.
What? Well, again, what?
She turned on the oven.
She did everything. Who did that?
No,
who turned
it on?
Oh, Irit did, sorry.
No,
Irit didn't turn on the oven.
The help
switched
on the oven. She made me a chicken on the way. I opened the oven.
Then that's good.
So as long as you have something.
Some involvement. Some amount. In fact, I think even if you're a Sfard, that would be good.
Right.
Well, I think that would be fine.
Right.
Right. You were involved in the cooking. You need to have some involvement in the cooking. Right? So, you know, according to Ashkenaz, it has to be minimal, right? According to Svardim, it has to be more significant. But I think spicing is definitely enough. I think even a Svardi would rely on that. Now, there are certain foods that these rules do not apply to. There's two major categories. The first major category is what's called Davar Shenechol Kamo Shehu Chai. Anything that you could eat raw, if it's cooked by a non-Jew, you're allowed to eat it cooked as well, even if you weren't involved. So vegetables, for example, right? If they cook your broccoli, so that's fine because you can eat raw broccoli, carrots, etc.
Do you have to be able to eat all the ingredients raw, or that's the main thing? Like if they add oil and garlic or whatever to the broccoli. I can't eat the oil raw.
Yeah. Sure you can. So you can. Mediterranean diet. Don't you want a Mediterranean diet? You're supposed to dip everything in the oil. Right? Isn't that?
No, but I don't know. They like
right?
I don't put egg on the broccoli. I don't even know if it'll work.
Right, so the question is, right, cheese
on the broccoli.
Right, that's fine, cheese, raw cheese, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Right, what about eggs? There are certain foods that are tricky. Can you eat raw eggs?
I don't usually do that.
Yeah, you can.
You can, but...
Well, again, if I remember correctly, Rocky ate raw eggs, for those who remember the movie, and my father told me at his bar mitzvah, they had him drink a raw egg beforehand for the voice, right? Does the can't goggle muggle, right? Does the can't do it?
Sometimes.
Oh, see, there we go.
Okay, so I don't have to be worried about eggs. So
right. So again, if right, what about shop meat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've eaten it.
Yeah.
What about fish?
Right about, what about salmon?
You can eat salmon, it's not so good.
People eat it all the time.
Yeah.
So then it's okay?
Right, that's fine. So I think salmon at this point for sure is nechel kamo shulchai. I think it's common that people eat raw salmon. Right?
Sushi is generally
raw salmon.
Again, one mishugana eats it, I think. But it changes over time. For example, cookie dough?
I know people that do that.
People eat cookie dough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little salmonella never hurt anybody. It's fine. What?
Sounds like
so it sounds like, yeah, if you eat the cookie dough raw, then it's no problem that they bake it.
The
it. Well, assuming that you're watching and you know it's kosher, yeah. Because people eat raw cookie dough, so therefore it's not a problem.
So you always have to be
Russian. Right, you have to make sure that it's kosher, right? No, you know,
that's your job.
Right, that's right. Job. Again, you know, if she uses lard, you know, the fact that you can eat it raw doesn't make it better. Right. So in terms of, so again, on the other hand, there are definitely foods I think people do not eat raw. Potatoes?
Not generally.
Yeah.
It's just not good.
Yeah, so that's why. Even if you're going to find, there's probably some Michigan who eat raw potatoes out there. I'm sure you can find somebody. I don't think you'll break your teeth on it. Right, you know. But I think that the potatoes would be an example of something that's not nechel kamo shehuchai.
Pasta.
Right?
You
could, but I think people don't. Right?
It doesn't melt in your mouth.
Not just in your hands.
Wait a minute, so if you do not have a pile, like, your housekeeper cannot be making your children a pot of macaroni from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wait a minute.
I'm waiting. I'm not going anywhere. What?
Are you on the macaroni?
If I mixed the macaroni and cheese and I made it in a casserole.
Yeah.
Or I put it in the pot.
Excellent.
The help can't turn on the stove? Or
no, they can. They can. They just can't do the whole thing.
So I just can't leave the house and not have anything done.
Yeah, that's some.
Yeah.
Right.
Some.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Rabbi, I'd like to ask you a question.
So you should ask, Beth. Please, don't be shy.
If you've covered this before, just... Okay. How do you explain to somebody that you can eat something like Kellogg's things and they're not marked?
So I think the answer is that you can't eat Kellogg's things that are not marked.
You can't eat Kellogg's what?
Kellogg's have a K on it. Not just before the E. They have another...
a little K. The bottom on the corner.
Hershey's do. Hershey's have OUs on them.
On everything?
I believe so. Right, didn't we check today at 7-Eleven? Right? Yeah.
Was it on there?
Yeah.
There
you go. And again, in... Right.
Years ago, when they didn't have markings, and they said... Oh,
In Europe, they don't have markings at this point, right? In Europe, there's just a list that you have to know. These things are on the list, right? But here, it's very rare to find something without a marking that people tend to eat. Even Kellogg's has the K. General, we always rely on K's because we don't know what the K stands for. We know in Kellogg's that it happens to be the Vada Rabbanim in Massachusetts, and we rely on them for a tea to our Kellogg's.
The thing that gets kind of tricky is I bought these lately, these little packets of potatoes that you add water to and enough time. And they all had OU, 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 and I bought all these different flavors. And when I got home, there were, one was, you know, garlic and herb, one, they all had OU. But I picked up one that said loaded.
Ham and cheese.
And it had no marking on it. So, of course, I looked. And I don't know what was in it that wasn't kosher, but I put it back in the bag. And it's in the car. I'm taking it back to the store.
Okay, if anyone wants to ride to the store.
But everything else, all the other flavors were kosher.
Okay. Okay, the second rule. There's only two rules, so let's see if we can get me through both of them. The second rule.
Really? What was the first rule?
If you could eat it raw.
Got it. I'm with you.
Okay, good. The second one is it's not part of it. Eino ola al shulchan lo shel malachim. Should I translate?
Yeah.
Okay, I will. It's the type of thing that would not be served on the table of kings. It is not a problem. Now, what is the definition of something that is served on the table of kings? What do kings eat? So that is a machokas. The Chazanish thinks literally. What does the Queen of England eat? If the Queen of England... Correct.
What?
Sardines.
That is correct. So that's exactly what came up. In the 1950s, Life magazine ran a profile of Queen Elizabeth. And every morning she has sardines for breakfast. So based on that...
That's why she lives so long.
Right? Unbelievable. That's why she's so missed. She's not a happy person. But eat some Fruit Loops. She'll be happier. So the Chazon Ish, that's the definition, literally. Other people assume not that way. It's not... You know, Ronald Reagan likes to eat jelly beans. Does this suddenly make it some sort of royal food?
King.
What?
I don't know.
Again, I assume he probably had more power than the Queen of England.
So what doesn't go on that?
Give me an example. Right. Kings eat Pop-Tarts these days.
Right.
Popcorn.
Happy kings do.
So what
King Candy does.
What don't kings eat?
Right. So other people say, no, what it means is what would be served at a banquet. Right? If you went to the Waldorf, would they serve this or not? If this is the type of thing they would not serve, then... No, it is kosher even if it was cooked by a non-Jew. So, give an example, canned vegetables. You would never go to a fancy banquet and they would be serving canned vegetables.
Canned
peas. Right? Right, they would only serve fresh.
Peas.
Right?
Fresh or frozen.
Okay. Yeah, I doubt frozen. But.
Right.
What? No, so I'm saying, so even if you have canned potatoes, for example, yes, they make
canned
those
beans.
Things, right? Or canned beans, which we love, right? If you, right, that would not be a problem of it. So therefore, for example, even the Vod has a list of things that do not require a hashgacha. Right? We mentioned last week apple juice, orange juice. Many, if not all, canned vegetables do not require a hashgacha, actually. No?
Wait.
Really?
I get this canned vegetable.
100% apple juice.
But why canned beans? Where else would they get their beans from?
What? Where do our chili beans come from? Beans do not grow in cans. Right? Because if they did, we'd make a shahako on them. We'd make a hot dubba. That means it probably comes from the ground.
They don't pick them, right? The Waldorf, they don't have a garden in the back. They have to pick them all from the ground and find canned beans. You have to make sure they didn't add stuff.
Right, but they just flinch.
So are you saying I can buy vegetables in cans without a hedgerow?
Most of them, yeah. Almost I think if according to the Vod, even. Yeah. The Vod has a surprisingly...
Not beans. I don't think you can buy beans without a hedgerow. Because it could go through the same machine as pork and beans.
Right. So you got to check that out. But in terms of Bishlach...
Do they add stuff? It's not... Don't they add stuff usually? No.
No.
I know, but I've always
heard
that...
It
might depend, especially
beans.
You have to have a hedgerow.
Right, again, so for example, there's different, the OU would always tell you that mandarin oranges, that's a big question. Mandarin oranges, you can purchase them without a hashgacha unless they are product of China.
Lama?
What? Because it seems that the believe it or not, they're infested there, and there are serious bug problems. So if you...
Wait, you can buy mandarin oranges without a hashgacha?
No. What?
You can buy mandarin oranges without a hashgacha?
If they're not from China. There is no mandarin oranges in King Supers without a hashgacha that are not from China.
Recently I was running every
Right. Yeah, but it's rare. You'll find that almost all of them are, all the ones without hashgachas tend to be Chinese. But in the, if you happen to find one, we rarely do, that would be okay.
They're both frozen.
Right. Right. The so we'll discuss that eventually, the idea of buying a fish without a hashgacha, but we're not up to that now. So these are the two rules. One is it has to be
if you can't,
it's a problem if you can't eat it raw, right? And it would appear on the shulchan shel malachim, on the tables of kings, right? So if you have either of those two, then it's not a problem. Right, and again, if the Jew is involved in it, it's not a problem.
We only have a good example of the second one.
What?
Canned potatoes.
Right.
What is the decision on sturgeon?
I think that's a little off topic, so we're going to have to hold off on that for now. So you just hold your sturgeon for that, babe, okay? You're holding that sturgeon? You can put it in the bag if you want. So there is another very important exception to this rule. And that is as follows. And again, this is the disagreement between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. According to the Ashkenazic view, baked goods do not fall under this rule either. Right? That is why you'll sometimes see that with the Hashgacha on bread, it will say, Pas Yisrael. Right? That's something special. Meaning that if I have bread, or in fact any baked goods, right, that does not have these rules. So entemin cakes, even if the mashkiach didn't turn on the pilot light, and even if there's no Jews that are working in the factory, Ashkenazim are the opinion that's fine. Bread, cookies, baked goods do not have an issue with bishul akum. Sfardim disagree. Sfardim think that this is not an exception to the rule. That's why sometimes you will see, you have this in ShopRite in New York. If you buy a challah there, it says OU, Pas Yisrael. It actually says it on the ShopRite thing. It says it also here in King Soopers, right? That has the PY on it, indicating Pas Yisrael, saying we are not relying on the opinion that says you do not need a Jew involved in this. That's why it says Pas Yisrael. So therefore, a Sephardi can comfortably buy bread at King Soopers without a problem. But if not, an Ashkenazi, so a Sephardi, would likely not buy an Entenmann's cake because he would not rely on this leniency. That is why, if somebody's not relying on it, they'll oftentimes put it on. A lot of times, if you call up, they'll tell you, but in certain cases, like we have in King Soopers, they write it specifically that way. Even Ashkenazim try to avoid this leniency in two cases. One is Shabbos. On Shabbos, we try. That's why we buy our challahs instead of buying regular loaves of bread, which would be fine here actually in King Soopers, because we don't want to rely on the leniency of something that is baked by a non-Jew, because there are opinions that it's no good. And also doing the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, also as well, we try not to rely on that if it's possible. I think our time is up. We will continue next week.
What is the PAS?